Welcome to Political Rewind. It's 3:06 on Friday afternoon. We are live in the Midtown Atlanta studios of Georgia Public Broadcasting. I'm Bill Nygut. With us today in the studio, Greg Bluestein, political reporter for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. Howard Franklin, he's a Democratic strategist and a lobbyist, I think is a fair way to say, government relations man. Jackie Gingrich Cushman, she writes mostly about conservative politics, or she comes from a conservative perspective on her blog and on various websites. And Todd Rehm, the editor of GeorgiaPundit.com and also a Republican consultant. You know, all of you, thank you for being here. You get to the point where, once again, we come into a Friday show where we have to deal with another terrorist attack. And it's, at a certain point, it's you struggle to figure out what are the words to discuss this. And yet, we do have to talk about it. Greg Bluestein, we're now told the latest coming out of Nice is that there are so far 84 dead. There are, I think, a half dozen or so in critical condition. And hundreds who have been injured. It's just it's getting hard to wake up in the morning and read about this stuff.
It is, and every time one of these terror attacks happens, we say it's going to transform the race, it's going to transform the political scheme, and it really hasn't. No one knows how to respond, how to most effectively respond, whether declaring war on radical Islam or toughening our own security or cracking down on gun laws, or what would be the answer. But no one's kind of put their finger on it yet.
Well, you know, Jackie, it is. I mean, we do have to talk about this from a political perspective, because after all, Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump are positioning themselves to be the next commander-in-chief and president of the United States. So while in a way I sort of recoil a bit putting it in a political perspective when there's such tragedy, but it's crucial to the dialogue.
Well, I think it's crucial to dialogue, but I think even more important than where we are in this political process, I think as a culture, as a nation, I think we have to come to grips with who is actually at war with us. And I think we really need to rethink this process. But we have a group, we have radical Islam, people that believe in Islamism. They believe that actually that Islam should be part of the government. They are determined to put that into effect, and their beliefs run absolutely counter to what we believe in Western civilization. And we need to understand that we embrace freedom and diversity, and we like to have these conversations and these open dialogues. But they're all about adherence and purity. And their goal is not terrorism. Do not be confused. It really frustrates me to read that and to hear that. Their goal isn't terrorism. Their goal is to win. Their goal is to replace Western civilization with their way of life. And until we understand that as a society and figure out how to defeat them, we will not be done with this.
Well, we're going to talk about all that. We're going to unpack a lot of what you just had to say. And then, of course, we're going to turn to the really big Republican political story as we move into the weekend before the Republican convention. And that is, of course, confirmation from Donald Trump that his running mate will be Indiana Governor Mike Pence. He tweeted that out this morning. But let's talk about how the candidates responded. Todd, here's how Donald Trump last night after the attack was on Bill O'Reilly's show, and they had a conversation about the attack, and here's how it unfolded.
Would you go to Congress and ask for a declaration of war?
I would. This is war. If you look at it, this is war coming from all different parts, and frankly, it's war, and we're dealing with people without uniforms. You know, in the old days, we'd have uniforms. You knew what you were fighting. These people were allowing people into our country who we have no idea where they are, where they're from, who they are. They have no paperwork. They have no documentation in many cases. And Hillary Clinton wants to allow 550% more in than even Obama.
There will be, by the end of the summer, 10,000 Syrian refugees, 20% women, 60% children, 20% men. Do you consider those people threats? Do you
Yes.
consider them security threats?
Of course I do.
That's, of course, Donald Trump talking last night to Bill O'Reilly. Howard Franklin, our Democrat, I'm going to get you in a few minutes. But really, I want to turn to Todd and Jackie, our Republicans here. Todd, is this the way you want to hear the Republican candidate for president respond to this crisis?
I think that for people of my generation, this is likely this the question of how do you respond to a new type of war is going to define our generation the way that the Vietnam War defined my parents' generation. And, you know, there are a lot of people struggling with getting their minds around something that we just haven't dealt with in the past. And so to hear some anger and some anxiety from the folks who have to deal with it is not surprising. And I think that is very much that's very much what the people out there in America are feeling is anger and anxiety and the issues that come when your worldview has to adapt to a new reality. This is not something that's going to be easy.
All right, Howard. Given what Todd just said, Trump used this as an opportunity once again to cast suspicion on refugees, who many of whom are Muslims, coming into this country. In the long run, is that an effective message right now? Is Todd right that this is the sort of thing that the voter wants to hear?
I can't say whether that's true or not. I think it was effective through the primary against an effort to vanquish 16 foes. But I got to imagine, I agree with some of what Todd says. I do think the American public wants their leaders to empathize and reflect some of the anguish and concern and horror that we've seen as a part of these attacks. But I think what we want in a president is for someone to take those feelings, meld them with some strategy, some experience, some steadfastness, and figure out how to address this, right? Our country is only a few hundred years old, but we don't expect it to go anywhere, and I think we got to come up with an answer.
All right, before we talk more, let's listen to the very different way in which Hillary Clinton responded in a phone interview last night.
It's terrible that France has faced too much tragedy and violence, and we need to stand strongly with them because events like this remind us how vital it is in every way not to abandon them. We need to strengthen our alliances, and I include NATO in that. We've got to do more to understand that this is a war against these terrorist groups, the radical jihadist groups. It's a different kind of war. We need to be smart about how we wage it, but we have to be determined that we're going to win it.
Absolutely.
And that's going to require working with other people. Yeah. What is happening now is we are taking territory back in Iraq. We are squeezing them with inconsistent air attacks. We have killed a number of their leaders. We are putting together a much more effective coalition. I would intensify those efforts. I have no problem with having a summit. I would include, however, not only NATO allies. We've got great allies in the region who are holding the line for us, places like Jordan, like Israel, others who are really on the front lines themselves.
Sure. Todd, you want to jump in?
I was going to say that I think one of the criticisms of Hillary Clinton's approach to it is that it lacks everything that Trump had, which is the emotion and the struggle to process it. And it sounds so formulaic. She sort of goes, it's almost like, here's your foreign policy talking points: France, allies, sympathy, NATO, boom, bombing, boom, boom, boom. And I don't know how there is a desire, I think, for somebody who has the answers, but I don't know how realistic that is.
Well, that's a really fascinating comment, because what I'm hearing Greg Todd say essentially is, you're not criticizing or faulting Hillary Clinton for what she's suggesting needs to be done. He's criticizing her because it's not communicating in a powerful way to the voter and might not attract the voters to her side.
And that's always been one of the critiques against Hillary Clinton's campaign, is this is joyless juggernaut, and that it struggled with messaging, it struggled with emotion. And really here you also see Donald Trump struggling too to say what is a war on terrorism exactly mean, though. Neither of those candidates have been able to say exactly what a war, especially in a day and age where a truck becomes a weapon of mass violence, how do you stop that?
Yeah, I would like to say, jump in, though. I think after the attack in Orlando, I think Trump very did clearly lay out not how to solve it, but what it was. And I think that's, again, Hillary Clinton doesn't have the emotion, nor do I think she has the overall understanding of what this really means. She keeps talking about terrorism. Terrorism is a tactic. Terrorism is not why people do things. But I'm going to read you Trump's quote after Orlando, and he said, quote, many of the principles of radical Islam are incompatible with Western values and institutions. Radical Islam is anti-woman, anti-gay, anti-American. If we want to protect the quality of life for all Americans, women and children, gay and straight, Jews and Christian and all people, then we must tell the truth about radical Islam. So I think part of the process we have to go through as a country is we have to be able to talk about the truth. And I think right now, I think we're scared to tell the truth.
Howard?
I don't think it's a question of being scared. I think, I mean, we're talking about, and this is maybe a philosophical difference between politicians on the left and the right. I think Hillary Clinton comes to this somewhat joyless because she has had to dispense of the duties of had to actually deal with this. While Donald Trump was building resorts and promoting golf courses, Hillary Clinton is actually dealing with these issues, these leaders, this terror in a frontline position for a number of years serving the American people. I think there is a seriousness that comes with that. And I also think there's an acknowledgement of the complexity of these issues, right? We can't just say they no longer wear uniforms, just going to bomb the hell out of them. There's something else we've got to come up with. I don't think either of them has necessarily hit the nail on the head with that, but I do think Hillary's response reflects more of that.
Well, I got to push back a little bit about Hillary Clinton, though, because, remember, again, when she was Secretary of State during the Benghazi episode, she originally blamed that on viral videos. So I think you got to be really careful when you start talking about her track record as the Secretary of State.
Four years, and one thing that you might call a mistake is not going to be enough to disqualify 15 years in the public sector.
I wouldn't say we're talking about one mistake. I mean, if you're going to give her credit for her tenure, you also have to take the hits that come along with not having effectively addressed the issue.
I'm not saying by any means that it's perfect.
I'm not saying it's that she knew the answer and it was in the corner and she just ignored it. But if you're going to say this is one of the reasons you ought to vote for me, the counter that is vote against her because she hasn't actually accomplished anything.
I think that's a fair criticism, but it's probably one you can level against any member of the ruling class for the last couple centuries, right? If what they were doing was solving problems, then we wouldn't be addressing the same problems today.
Hey, Greg, it seems to me that one of the most meaningful comments I've heard so far in all of this conversation is, I said it at the beginning of the show, we're at a point where it's very difficult to figure out what words matter in all this. You know, President Obama issued a very quick statement last night. He condemns this in the most serious terms, whatever the language was. You know, at a certain point, whether it's I think Trump's bellicosity, I think what Todd's saying, his bellicosity breaks through even if it isn't based on anything substantive.
Yeah, I mean, it strikes a nerve in the American populace who's worried that this could be coming. We've already seen mass shootings with people who claim allegiance to ISIS. But there's worries that ISIS will be even more involved in terror attacks against the U.S. And this certainly strikes a chord with people who are worried about that. People, you know, in big cities and small towns across the country who just are freaked out. What's going
to
happen next?
So to any of you who want to respond to this, it continues to look as though as the summer progresses and we move into the fall, and God forbid, but the likelihood that we're going to see more attacks, unfortunately, is probably at least maybe real, right? And so what we're going to see is a campaign that puts someone who's had some experience, some mistakes in that experience, with a measured approach to solving this problem or to attacking this problem against someone who will continue to have a martial drumbeat, will continue to some extent to marginalize Muslims. And it's a laboratory for what voters are looking for. Yes? No?
Well, there's no reason to think the attacks won't stop.
That's right.
So, and that's also where Trump's law and order, I am the law and order candidate, works on two different levels. He says he's going to bring law and order to the unrest over police violence and to the violence happening in the streets. And he also is also sending the signal he wants to be the candidate who can bring law and order and safety to people who are worried about terrorist attacks.
And I think the reality is, I mean, I think Todd's got a great point. I mean, Hillary Clinton's been part of this administration for almost 8 years. Obviously, this situation has not been solved. It's a real problem. She was Secretary of State. And I think when you look at, you know, who do you think can solve it, if she's been there and had the opportunity and has not made real progress from the outsider's perspective, then you go with the person that has that emotional appeal. I think on the other hand, I think we need to be very You mentioned in Bill in your question, you know, that Trump's marginalizing Muslims. I would say he's actually what he's doing is he's saying, look, we don't know where these people from these areas are coming from. We need to make sure we know where their allegiance is. And if their goal is to come into our country and destroy our way of life, we probably shouldn't let them in. Now, if they happen to be, you know, be Muslim and they want to come to this country and they want to be citizens, they should absolutely be allowed in.
I think that's fair. I think the issue is, and when Trump made, you know, his initial salvo and said, hey, we're going to place a moratorium on allowing Muslims into the country, the follow-up question is where he struck out, right? Did he think that terrorists would raise their hands and hand over their terrorist card at the border? And so it's not a question. Yes, if we could stop terrorism with a wave of Trump's magic wand, we would all vote for him to be president. The problem is, can he actually do it? He certainly can talk about doing it. The question is, can he actually do it? And I think that's where he's light.
Well, and again, I think because she's actually been in the administration for the years, I think you're looking at someone you know hasn't solved it yet and someone who you think might. So it'll be interesting to see it
play
out.
She served at the pleasure of the president, though, right? She took orders as a Secretary of State. She was one of 100 U.S. senators. I think the case she's making is, put me in charge and let me use the experience I've had to actually do what I think needs to be done.
All right, one last quick question. Todd Rehm, put on your Republican consulting hat for a moment here. We have the attack in Nice on the Thursday night before the Republican convention starts. Would you be talking to convention managers about how to incorporate? Is there a different way of sounding a theme around this starting Monday night, or are they already set to deal with this?
I mean, I think that everything that's going to happen beginning Sunday morning through the next week is already set, except for what's going to come out of Donald Trump's mouth. I think that is the one thing that nobody at the RNC has any illusion about having any control over. And one of the issues is that, you know, we in the Republican Party, or at least at this convention, we don't have the gray-haired old men of foreign policy that we're going to be putting up on stage. And some of the folks who might be, you know, maybe from the first Bush administration, from the second Bush administration, who might be our gray eminences, aren't likely to want to make the trip.
Yeah. Really a good point.
Yeah. My guess is, I mean, if you look at this, I mean, obviously my father, Newt Gingrich, will be there. And he's very strong in national security. He's been involved with this a long time. He teaches a capstone course for four-star generals when they move up. He's very close to the military. He's obviously been very active in terms of what he thinks and where he thinks we need to go. My guess is, you know, that he may be a good speaker for that slot. And I have no doubt that even prior to this attack, that they wanted to make that radical Islam and terrorism and how we survive in this the next phase of what's happening as part of the process.
I'm going to give you a real quick chance to respond. We got to get a break.
Make that two RNC speakers that the RNC has no control over.
Boy, is that true. All right, look, first, Greg, before we take our break, you're leaving for Cleveland on Sunday. You're part of an AJC team that will be there all week. It's you, Jim Galloway, who we're going to hear from in a few minutes. He's already up there.
Kyle Wingfield and Erica Hernandez. Okay. And Galloway's been up there for almost a week now.
Yeah, he has. And we're going to hear, as I said, from him in a minute. One other quick program note, because the GOP convention starts on Monday, we're going to expand Political Rewind to make sure we bring you all the news coming out of Cleveland. So we will still be on the air, of course, Wednesday at 2 and Friday at 3, our regular schedule. But you can tune in on Tuesday, next Tuesday at 2, and we'll be reporting on the activities at the convention. We'll have live conversations with delegates who are up there, with some of the reporters who are up there. So I hope you'll tune in for Political Rewind Tuesday at 2. We're going to take a break, but when we come back, we're going to talk Mike Pence. But before we even talk Mike Pence, we've got to talk about Jackie Cushman's dad, Newt Gingrich, and a statement he made last night that is causing some controversy. It's 3:25. This is Political Rewind.
Republicans gather in Cleveland, Ohio next week, politics and all that, so we went to Cleveland, too, for some economics.
Why is it not progressing the way that it should? And to me, that's the question that I've been asking my whole life. Like, why aren't we progressing?
I'm Kai Rizdal, Race and Poverty in 2016 America, next time on Marketplace.
Tune in tonight at 6 here on GPB.
Hey, it's Peter Sagal. Resolved to lose a few pounds this year? How about a few thousand? Donate your old car, truck, or RV. Drop a lot of unwanted weight from your garage and support public radio.
Go to gpb.org/cars or call 877-GPB-1-CAR and thanks.
Break it down.
Welcome back to Political Rewind. Loved that music. Anybody know what that was in the control room there?
Was it Funky Cold Medina?
Yes, it was.
Oh, there
yes,
you go.
Yes, it was. Absolutely.
Good
you beat
stuff.
Me to it.
Good stuff. Welcome back. Howard Franklin, Democratic strategist, is here. So is Todd Ream, Republican strategist and editor of GeorgiaPundit.com, an online blog that gives you lots of good information about what's going on in politics at all levels every day. Greg Bluestein, the political reporter from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. You read him not only in the Dead Tree edition of the paper, but he contributes to Political Insider at AJC.com quite frequently. And Jackie Gingrich Cushman is with us as well. Thank you for being here, all of you. So we're at Politics, GPB, if you want to tweet us. This conversation has a potential to get a little heated because, Jackie, your dad, until last night, seemed to be a really high possibility. He was one of three finalists to become Trump's running mate, and he certainly positioned himself in a way that he hoped would put him in that position. Before we talk about Pence and a comment your dad made last night on Sean Hannity's show, when did you get word? Would you give us a little inside information about how this all developed in your family?
See, Greg's shaking his head. To be perfectly frank, I didn't keep a timeline. So he kept us up to date on the process, called us several times. He's been very transparent with the media. I mean, he's done some, you know, Facebook Live events. Yesterday he did one about the VP process. I think he's been very transparent about what happened and where he was. And I do think his earlier comment this week was very truthful. I mean, if you want to have two pirates in the ticket, then, you know, a Trump-Gingrich ticket would have been, you know, fabulous. And all the reporters everywhere would have been, you know, cheering because it would be a fabulously fun ticket to cover. But I think Pence is very strong. He's very solid. He obviously builds a bridge back to the establishment. He has the Washington experience. He's actually been a governor, so he's governed. He's a very safe choice, which I think is interesting because this is probably the first safe decision that Donald Trump has made.
But did your dad get a call from Donald Trump last night
telling him what
was happening?
So they've been in communication, and so, you know.
But did he get a call last night saying,
I don't know what time. I did not get a time, okay. Nor did I get a release of the dialogue.
I guess what I'm asking you is because I think it relates to some feelings this last 48 hours or so, Greg Bluestein, that Trump kind of let this process get out of control.
He did. I mean, the word leaked out. He does not like when word leaks out when he's not behind it. Word leaked out to, I think it was Roll Call first, and then a bunch of national outlets all said that it looks like Donald Trump will pick Mike Pence. Then the campaign kept on trying to walk it back. Even Paul Manafort said, I think he's picking Pence, but it's not final till it's final. Then he postpones the announcement because of the terror attacks. And then he puts it on Twitter instead of some big, you know, glitzy news event. It's on. He has to announce it on Twitter that the press conference will be tomorrow. But at the same time, he got another 3 days of media coverage guaranteed at going into the convention. No one's talking about Hillary Clinton's campaign appearance with Tim Kaine today. They're all talking about Mike Pence and Donald Trump.
All right, but there was some feeling that he was awfully indecisive at one of the most important moments of his campaign, picking a running.
Yeah, race. Even CNN's Dana Bash reported on Twitter saying that even last night, Donald Trump was asking, well, his advisors, is there any way we can go back on this? At midnight last night.
I want to go back to how you started out this segment saying getting out of control, as though control is something that exists in the campaign headquarters. That's how they roll. They roll out of control all the time. And, you know, I think that what you probably had is the Manaforts of the world struggling with the candidate says X, but who knows? Who knows what's going to happen. But I think what it really came down to at the end of the day was that Pence had an external deadline. He had a hard deadline of today to withdraw from the gubernatorial race.
Yeah, noon was the filing deadline in Indiana.
And I think that's why you got that tweet this morning, because Pence had to to get off the pot or go to
yeah,
work.
Yeah, I said on Morning Edition this morning with Bradley George in the Atlanta market, I said, if Pence is not going to file for re-election, he better have a signed document from Donald Trump
right.
saying, yes, you are definitely my running mate. So obviously Trump did have to send something out to make this as official as he could. They're now going to have a news conference tomorrow late morning,
11 a.m.
They'll get together finally, and we'll hear how that develops. But last night, that news of the terror attack was being reported, Jackie, your dad was on Sean Hannity's show, and I want to play something that he said. And I'm glad you're here because you get a chance to deal with the fallout from this. But here's what he said last night.
And let me be as blunt and as direct as I can be. Western civilization is in a war. We should, frankly, test every person from here who is of a Muslim background, and if they believe in Sharia, they should be deported. Sharia is incompatible with Western civilization. Modern Muslims who have given up Sharia, glad to have them as citizens, perfectly happy to have them next door. But we need to be fairly relentless about defining who our enemies are. Anybody who goes on a website favoring ISIS or Al-Qaeda or other terrorist groups, that should be a felony, and they should go to jail. Any organization which hosts such a website should be engaged in a felony. It should be closed down immediately.
Jackie, you gave me a puzzled look when I said fallout, but there has been fallout. The notion of suggesting that American Muslims should somehow report in and take a test to prove they don't have an allegiance to Sharia law is a controversial statement.
Oh, absolutely. No, I was giving you that because you were saying that I should defend my father like this is the first time it's happened. And is it really my job to defend him? I think he does a pretty good job on his own. So I don't really think he needs my help. And
fair
for those
enough.
That actually want to go and see, he did a Facebook Live event today about this topic and this question. It's still up there. You can go and play it. Unfortunately, I didn't have the time to be part of that today, so I haven't seen it myself, but I'm sure he articulated what happened. But his real point is what we talked about earlier. We are facing an enemy who are against everything we believe in. They are anti-women, they are anti-gay, they are anti-anything that is not them. And I think we have to understand that, and we have to rethink how we deal with it. So, you know, I'm sure on Facebook Live he did a great job explaining his actual comments, but I know that his intent was, you know, if we have people that actually want to come into our country and want to defeat our way of life, we need to acknowledge that and we need to figure out how to find those people. We can't just sit back here and say, we'll welcome everybody and we hope they all love us.
Greg, when I heard those remarks from Gingrich last night, I had one of two diametrically opposite reactions. I thought, number one, he's still hoping that he can call attention to himself and that Trump might, in fact, pick him. Or number two, he knew it was over, so he thought, what the heck? I will just go all the way with this.
I thought that he was, you know, he made that case yesterday in the Facebook Live earlier saying, pick, you know, you can either pick two pirates or you can pick a relatively regular guy, which seemed to be saying that, that Gingrich was saying he's not a regular guy.
Well.
Exactly.
Let's give you a chance to respond. When you hear those remarks by Newt Gingrich, what do you think?
It's so tough to respond. I mean, I think Jackie is right in one sense. We do have to rethink our response to terrorism. And I'd recategorize that approach. I think we have been continuously rethinking over the last two decades, not just for this presidency, not just for the one prior, but for quite a long time. Now, whether or not we've come up with an answer that will address this issue is in dispute. But what I will say, and I think we would all agree, is that terrorism has also evolved year after year, decade after decade, to move beyond whatever we've come up with. So this is not, you know, the sort of problem that's binary, and we come up with an answer, and then the problem is solved.
Okay, I have to say, I think this is a remarkably sanguine response to a suggestion that what we ought to start doing is identifying individual Muslims in the United States and asking them essentially to swear allegiance to American law, not Sharia law, when the reality is what Muslims here are adhering first to Sharia law in the mainstream Islamic community.
Well, no, you're right. I'm probably explaining something that started earlier as opposed to answering your direct question. But it's also crazy season, Bill. Like the fact that we've got a major party nominee who would probably agree word for word with those comments makes it difficult to even, you know, to have a conversation. The people who believe that won't be swayed in another direction. It's, you know, we're talking past one another.
Okay.
Well, and this is part of that. We have to come to grips with the fact that we are in a different paradigm. Mm-hmm. It's not possible to tell the enemy by the language they speak and the uniform they wear, because they're not uniform. It's not, okay, we're going against the Germans, or we're going against, you know, this group of Koreans and against that group of Koreans. Ours wear these uniforms, theirs wear a different uniform. It's struggling to define, and you can say that the issue is defined as radical Islam, but even what does that mean? What does that even mean? It is going to be something that we have to grapple with. How do you determine who the enemy is, and how do you identify him? I don't think any radical terrorist is going to answer the questions in the way that allows us to say, aha, this guy's a terrorist, you know, take him out the back door.
Precisely. Yeah.
But I think you hit a good point, Todd, and I'm going to recommend, if you haven't read this book, Bill, I'm glad to buy it for you. Christian Whiten lays out, he's a 2013 book. Christian Whiten was a former national security advisor under Bush. And he wrote a book in 2013 called Smart Power Between Diplomacy and War. And he talks specifically about radical Islam and the definition thereof. But I think you have raised a good point. I think for many people, the idea is so counter to how we're brought up in our country, in the United States, where we do value freedom and we value diversity. To be faced with someone who has declared us their enemy, we don't have to declare them our enemy because they've already declared us their enemy, who totally believes in something different, I think is really challenging for us from a society.
And a coda on this, the Counselor for American Islamic Relations sent out a statement this morning about Speaker Gingrich's comments and said that compared the Sharia to Jewish halakha and to Catholic liturgy, saying essentially if you're trying to go after people who are following Sharia law, that means you're going after tax-paying, law-abiding Muslims who pray, because that's also what the Sharia, you know, that's what the Sharia calls for. So at what point do we draw the line is what the CAR group is asking.
So we are going to take a break in a second and come back and finally talk about Mike Pence and hear from Jim Galloway up in Cleveland. But let me just share with you what people are saying to us on Twitter right now, at PoliticsGPB. A lot of Democrats out there today. That is not always the case. But Amanda says, fear-mongering and declarative statements, great way to harass immigrants and Muslims, but not an anti-terrorism strategy. Khalid tweets, is radicalism any different from evangelical Christianity? Both are anti-gay and anti-women. And Amanda says that Newt Gingrich's comment is antithetical to freedom of speech. And Jim Galloway is apparently listening online.
Oh,
he says, Donald Trump has never hired anyone who isn't willing to comport in a subservient manner, right? Thank you, Jim Galloway. I hope Mr. Trump isn't listening to our show right now. Let's take a break. It's Political Rewind at 3:39. When we come back, Mike Pence and Jim Galloway. What a combination.
On Monday, Republicans will convene in Cleveland to nominate Donald Trump for president. NPR and PBS NewsHour will be there, too. We're teaming up to bring you live coverage each night. I'm Rachel Martin. Join me, Judy Woodruff, and Gwen Ifill for speeches, interviews, and analysis live from the Republican National Convention. Special coverage from PBS NewsHour and NPR News.
You can listen live Monday through Thursday from 8 to 11 on gpbnews.org. You're listening to Political Rewind on Georgia Public Broadcasting, an 18-station radio network of GPB. I'm Ellen Reinhart. GPB Atlanta is licensed to Georgia State University, offering 55 undergraduate and graduate degree programs in more than 250 fields of study.
We're back on Political Rewind. Greg Bluestein of the AJC, Todd Rehm, Jackie Cushman, and Howard Franklin are in the studio today. Jim Galloway has been in Cleveland since Monday morning. He covered the platform committee and reported on that on Wednesday. Yesterday, he had a marathon, 14, 15-hour day, covering the Rules Committee, which was where, if there was going to be an anti-Trump wave that succeeded, that's where it was going to happen. They were The anti-Trump folks had some changes in the rules, including one that would unbind delegates so that they could vote their consciences, presumably, as opposed to voting for Donald Trump, and other measures as well. We talked to Jim late this morning. Let's listen to his report from Cleveland. Jim, what's the headline, as far as you're concerned, coming out of Cleveland today?
You had the anti-Trump movement killed dead in its track late last night.
Yeah, you were watching the Rules Committee as it played all of this out. What was that like?
Man, I've got calluses on my rear end. That was a 14-hour session, and they dragged it out purposely. They wanted to exhaust the anti-Trump forces. And then finally, the Reince Priebus Donald Trump forces kind of made their move and just jammed through. They had three votes, and it was all over within an hour.
The Trump forces, with the RNC's help, organized well for this, despite some people's concerns that maybe Trump didn't quite know how to play this game. Am I correct?
Right, right. And before the Rules Committee met, there was a platform committee. And the feeling that I was getting from the kind of the Republican regulars that the Trump people were kind of mixing in pretty darn well with the party regulars, and they weren't being heavy-handed, they weren't being really obvious arm twisters, but they got what they wanted. I think that's the case all the way around.
Were any Georgians active in any way on this Rules Committee?
Our friend Randy Evans was just all over this. It was very interesting. There was a test vote. There was a test vote yesterday afternoon, and it was very clear that the anti-Trump forces couldn't muster the 28 votes that were necessary to create a minority report and carry that fight to the floor. That was their aim. The victory for them was never in the cards within the Rules Committee itself.
Mm-hmm.
So as soon as that test vote occurred, you had Randy Evans get up and say, can we shift the rest of these amendments in one pile over to Republican National Committee in general later on in the year, i.e. can we kill that fight right now? It's kind of the move that he always makes at a Georgia Republican convention, you know, just to diffuse it by saying, let's have a mass vote, agree, and let's get out of here. And the eruption from the anti-Trump forces was sharp and immediate, and Randy got up and said, "I withdraw my amendment." It was a nice moment.
Do we expect any action on the floor that will in any way disrupt Trump's march to the nomination?
You could have a few kind of renegade social conservatives try something on the floor. You also could have something. Now, we had a really interesting fight that I think we talked about on Wednesday about an effort to put just simply the initials LGBT into the Republican platform,
yes,
which was defeated. So you could see something attempted from the floor or a protest of some sort regarding that.
What are you hearing from Georgians who are already up there about the selection of Mike Pence?
By and large, they're very much, I talked to John Padgett, the chairman mm-hmm. of the GOP. He was fine by him. The only pushback you're likely to get among Georgia Republicans is those who were active in the religious liberty fights in the state capitol.
All right, that's Jim Galloway reporting from Cleveland. He'll be with us all next week. In some cases, we hope live while we're on the air, and when he can't get to it, we'll be getting tape reports from him. Greg Bluestein, let's talk Mike Pence for a few minutes. I think this is an informed listenership out there. They know he's the governor of Indiana. He's a social conservative, probably in terms of social issues, much more conservative than Donald Trump, yes?
He is. He's a very conventional choice for a somewhat non-conventional candidate. Very socially conservative, very popular with evangelical Christians. But as Jim mentioned, not popular with a wing of social conservatives who are champions of the religious liberty bill, because he signed a very tough religious liberty bill in Indiana, and then when lawmakers and other state leaders went to amend that bill after a revolt by business leaders and gay rights groups, he also signed in a weakened version of it and had to basically backtrack. And
yeah,
they see that as a betrayal.
I'm sorry, Todd. Josh McCoon, who of course is the leader of all of the religious liberty measures that have been floating around the Georgia legislature for the last few years, wrote this about Pence. He says, and McCoon is a delegate at the Republican mm-hmm. National Convention. Pence has two problems. He blew all his social conservative cred when he caved in the wake of signing the Indiana RFRA. His selection, therefore, will not reassure social conservatives that a Trump administration will support conservative priorities. And he expanded Medicaid, the one issue that has united the whole GOP in opposition to Obamacare. Are we really about to put someone on the ticket that neuters our ability to critique Obamacare? Todd?
Well, you know, I think that the first thing I would say is that I think Jim's perhaps being optimistic when he says he sort of thinks they put paid to the anti-Trump movement. If there's one thing that folks who make it to Republican conventions and are there for somebody other than the main show have going for them, it's that they spend late nights reading rule books and they believe that they are in a fight for, the nation and the soul of the nation and our place in history. And so I don't think they're going to just sit, say, well, they're passing out the Kool-Aid. We might as well calm down and drink it. I think you're going to see some revived efforts. But to be fair, I don't think Pence is, you can take or leave Pence. I don't think anybody believes that a VP pick is going to have that much sway with Donald Trump.
All right, Howard, is Mike Pence, does he offer Democrats a big target on things like he's anti-abortion? He obviously believes in religious liberty laws that he thinks ought to be put in place. He's anti-Planned Parenthood. Is this a big target for Democrats?
I think you already know he will be. And I think, obviously, the news attention, the media attention that he's garnered in the last two legislative sessions in his own state have already introduced him to many Democrats, many voters, in a way that probably isn't necessarily the way he'd like if he wants to, when he's going to be on the November ballot.
I should tell you, if you haven't seen it yet, the Clinton campaign, in response to the tweet that Donald Trump sent out confirming Pence late this morning, called Pence, quote, the most extreme pick in a generation, citing his views on abortion, gay rights, immigration, and the minimum wage. Ironically, Jackie, despite his social conservatism, he criticized Trump pretty strenuously when Trump suggested a Muslim ban late last year or early this year, whichever it was, and said it was unconstitutional and just wrongheaded.
Well, I'd like to say that I think it'd be pretty hard to find anyone that would be potential VP material that hadn't criticized Trump at some point in time. So I think to bring up, look at Chris Christie, he ran against him in the primary. Look at my father. This is Donald Trump is very eloquent and makes a lot of comments. And I don't think that matters, to be honest with you. I do think what's fascinating is a couple of things. I think one, I think this does shore him up on the right. This is not a two pirate ticket that Greg mentioned earlier. This is someone who's known by the Hill. This is someone that's in the Midwest, which I think helps him a lot. He's a very, he's very solid. He's a very good speaker. They're going to be able to tell him, and in terms of from a campaign standpoint, the campaign managers could be able to deal with him, I think, very well, and he's going to be part of that campaign. And I think for Trump, it's a very smart pick.
It's interesting, Todd, Greg, you may want to weigh in this as well. While we know that Newt Gingrich is a fiery speaker and can really, when he wants to attack, can do it with great energy, colorful language, Mike Pence is much more soft-spoken. The question is whether he's going to become known as sort of the velvet shiv of this campaign. Given a chance to attack Hillary the other day, Hillary Clinton, when Trump was up there with him, he did it, but he did it in a way quite different from the way that Trump goes after her.
Yeah, Pence used to be a radio talk show host, and he called himself Rush Limbaugh on decaf. And now Democrats are calling him Donald Trump on decaf. He's the more subdued, more calm, lower profile.
Are you looking forward to covering him? To the extent that you will cover him, is he a guy who's going to generate excitement out there in the media and then, also in the public?
Yeah, I don't think he was picked to generate the excitement. He was sort of picked to bring the base home and to be someone comforting for evangelicals. Speaking as a reporter, objectively,
We wanted Gingrich for
that. Another one of Gingrich running, right?
He was a hometown candidate. We were going to follow him on the bus. We had all these plans laid out to track his every footstep. So,
and not to mention, you never knew what he's going to say. So that would have been great too, right?
There would have been a blog post a minute.
So. I mean, but that means you would have had to double your news coverage because you'd have two guys crisscrossing the country saying, you know, always coming out of the back pocket.
Exactly. I don't think if you're a Democratic strategist at the national organization or if you're a reporter, there's any way anything Mike Pence can do short of setting himself on fire that takes the spotlight off of Trump.
Great point.
And I think that was part of the calculus was that, you know, we've got the headline maker. We don't need somebody to come up with great one-liners. We've got the machine right over here. We need somebody to calm down the money guys.
Okay, I'll tell you what. We've got a little time left, and as I go into talking about Hillary Clinton, Bernie Sanders, and the Democrats, Howard Franklin, just a note to our listeners out there. Every now and then we hear from people who say you spent so much time talking about Republicans or so much time talking about Democrats. Okay, let me acknowledge today that we're spending a lot of time talking about Republicans because, frankly, that's where the news is this week and they're heading into their convention. When it's the Democrats' turn, we are, aren't we, Greg? We're going to be talking all about Democrats for a week.
It'll be a week-long Democrat race. But I'm sure Trump will try to change the subject too, plenty.
Oh, I'm sure he will. Howard Franklin, the Democrats are going to set up sort of an alternative convention. Do you know what the language is they're putting to this group they're going to have in Cleveland, Greg? They're saying we do it better. We can have a better world. I don't know what it is.
And they're calling it the counter-convention.
The counter-convention. Okay. Which, by the way, it's interesting that was in the news because there's nothing unusual about that at all. At any given convention, in my experience over the years, the other party is there with a media room set up with a big machine to crank out messages that counter what the party's saying. Yeah. So what are the Democrats, what should the Democrats be talking about next week without knowing precisely what the convention's going to do in Cleveland?
I mean, I think at this point it's really mostly about the platform and the personalities, right? We've seen, and we know that the platforms won't really dictate the race for the next several months, but it is something that's been passed by these delegates in Cleveland. And I think the personalities, too, give us plenty to talk about. I think the decisions from a governing standpoint, with Pence, and obviously the campaigning standpoint with Mr. Trump, give Democrats plenty to rail against, and I'm sure we'll hear plenty of it.
When you look at your candidate, Hillary Clinton's performance over the past week or so in the aftermath of these awful terrorist attacks, including last night, there are some, and I've observed this, that feel that by being as reserved as she has been, by trying so hard to be a steady force, she's left the field wide open for Trump. Are you at all disappointed that she hasn't been more aggressive in courting attention around these issues?
I don't know if I'd see it that way. I kind of think of it more from a basketball analogy, like LeBron James is going to get his 40 points, right? You know, Donald Trump is going to be on television, on radio, on Twitter, et cetera. I think the question is, are you always talking or are you talking when you've got something to say that people will respond to? And I think that that's really the point. I think that there's also a time to let folks mourn and to soak in the solemnness of, you know, these terror attacks as they keep coming, and not just this week, but last week as well. So I think there's still a little oxygen for people to soak that up.
Greg, as a reporter covering these things, you do strain to figure out how to give Hillary Clinton the kind of attention and coverage that Donald Trump commands in the way he handles himself, yes?
Yeah, and we were saying before the show, I mean, we spent days, and partly because Newt Gingrich is somewhat of a local story, having built his political career in Georgia, but we spent days, I wrote 5 or 6 prep stories for all the different potential running mate stories. We've written, I don't know, a dozen or so stories in the last week. We haven't written really anything about Hillary Clinton's running mate, and partly it's because Newt Gingrich is a local guy, but partly it's because all the talk and all the debate is over who's going to pick, and I'm sure that will change a little next week as Hillary's camp starts to coalesce around whoever their running mate is.
I think there's also a necessity. I think his pick is more consequential for his political trajectory. Obviously, yeah. Hillary Clinton's been around for a very long time, and not to say the VP won't matter at all, but we obviously know who she is as a policymaker, and that pick won't change very much of that.
And I think you're right. I think that's part of the challenge Hillary's going to have. I think in today's environment, if you look at both primaries, I mean, Hillary had a much harder time than I think anyone imagined with Bernie Sanders because he came from the outside, and clearly Donald Trump came from the outside. But I think Hillary Clinton, who we know for so long that, you know, she's not well-liked, but she's always been known as smart and hardworking. And I think with the FBI release last week talking about how extremely careless she was in the handling of very sensitive and highly classified information, I think that really hurts her over the long term. I think because she didn't emotionally connect with people, I think that they always thought, well, but she's smart and hardworking. But then when you have someone come out and say that anyone in her position should have known better, how could she have not known better? When everyone I talk to that actually has like a job at a corporation understands they don't send out their email from their personal account, and she was Secretary of State, it kind of makes your head hurt. So I just wonder, you know, I think her narratives are changing. I think she's trying to grapple with that. And I think, quite honestly, she's going to have a real challenge at the Democratic convention to getting people to watch. Because after watching a whole week of the Republican convention and its excitement, I think it's going to be challenging to get people to actually stay tuned.
So, Todd, I think we hear from Jackie a message that we're going to hear in Cleveland a lot next week. But let me pick up on what she just said and ask you to respond to it. You know, the polls right now are surprising. Almost every poll, state in terms of even battleground states as well as the national polls, show this race has tightened, and it looks as if it actually may even be possibly a dead heat. Maybe Hillary Clinton's got a little edge in the polling averages, but not much. So the question becomes, are we at a reset moment in terms of that? Is Jackie right, or do we now reset because the voters will see first a Republican convention and the kind of way in which they get out their message, and then a week later go right to the Democratic convention, and then we have the debates down the road? Is this a reset moment, or is the damage already done to both candidates?
I think more than a reset moment, it is the time between the opening heats, the elimination rounds, and the big game. And it's going to be predictable for the next couple weeks. Trump will probably get a bump coming out of Cleveland. Then Hillary will rise and get a bump coming out of Philadelphia. But right now, a lot of what's really going on is the housekeeping in both parties in terms of dealing with, okay, so now we know who the VP is. How are we going to deploy him? What are we going to do? Is he better to spend his time trying to get money or trying to get votes? We're letting the circus go on while we get ready to play the big game.
All right, we are completely out of time. Todd Rehm, you got the last word in this show. Todd Rehm is with us. Jackie Cushman's been here. Howard Franklin and Greg Bluestein. Todd and Greg on their way to Cleveland this weekend. Have a wonderful time in Cleveland, Ohio. My grandparents' hometown. I love it up there and wish I were coming with you. That's all the time we have for Political Rewind this week. Remember, we are on the air Tuesday at 2 o'clock, Wednesday at 2, and Friday next week to cover the GOP convention news, and then we'll be doing the same thing a week later. Trevor Young is with us producing this show. Hannah Rose Adams and Caroline Hayes are our interns, and our senior producer, the wonderful Jenny Ament. Thank you all. I'm Bill Nygut. See you Tuesday at 2.